Yeah, my name's Lex, in case you don't know me. I have been working for Metro for nearly 5 years now. I've been working with the students here for nearly 5 years, which has been such an amazing blessing. But as Philip said earlier, for me and for Suze, who's been working with me this year, actually that's going to be coming to an end really soon. Which is really sad because we have so many amazing students here and it's been so much fun getting to work alongside you guys and kind of pour into you guys. But yeah, so we're going to be finishing up. At the Metro Weekend, there is still going to be provision for students beyond the Metro Weekend. Me and Suze are going to work really hard to put stuff in place for you guys for after that. So don't worry about that. But yeah, me and Suze will no longer be around. For me and Alan, we're going to be going and doing a little bit of traveling, which is very exciting. And then... yeah, all the cards are on the table. We're actually not sure what comes next for us. Whether we come back to Bristol, we're not sure. But so yeah, we're going to be finishing up our time at Metro, at the Metro Weekend. So we keep calling it our big Metro blowout. So if you want to come along to the big Metro blowout, make sure you come along, make sure you get tickets. It's going to be good fun. But today we are looking at our second part of the series, Jesus Eats. And I love this series. Food is one of my favourite things. When me and Alan go travelling, we're going to go and eat our way around the world. Go and do some cooking classes in Thailand, eat some banh mi in Vietnam, all the good stuff. And yeah, we love food. And today, after the morning service, we went back and we kind of made a homemade taka-taka. If you are a proper Bristolian, you all know what a taka-taka is. It's like a pita bread with some tzatziki and some chips in there with a bit of chicken and some salad. Really good stuff. Anyway, we're eating it and it's an absolute mess. But I was thinking, I love the fact that this is where Jesus chooses to do his ministry, with a face full of food and whatever it was he was eating kind of dripping everywhere and people were just kind of conversing over the table with a face full of food. It's so good because it's so much more relatable than in the temple, isn't it? Round the table is where we chat, it's where we do life. So that's where Jesus chooses to do his ministry. And I'm totally on board with that. So the story that we're going to look at today is in the Gospel of Luke. So in the Bible, there are kind of four different accounts of Jesus' life. And Luke is one of them. And so this whole story takes place in the house of a Pharisee. And this guy has invited Jesus over to his house to try and like suss him out, figure out who is this Jesus guy. But so one of the first things we need to know is this guy is a Pharisee. And a Pharisee, these guys were like the religious elite. They were the people who kept every single Jewish law. And they believed they needed to do this in order to stay clean and to be acceptable to God. So they avoided sin at all costs. They distanced themselves from people. They distanced themselves from all sorts of things that went on because they believed that they needed to be clean before God. So they were like your classic holier than thous. They were just about doing the right thing and being okay before God. And for some of you, that might sound like actually just that's what I think a Christian is, because sometimes it can look a little bit like that. But the Pharisees were the religious elite. And so if we start the story, it says this. When one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him, he went to the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table. So Luke is pretty keen on us knowing that this guy is a Pharisee, right? He's mentioned it twice already. But actually, if we carry on, it says this. Where are we? A woman in that town who lived a sinful life learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house. So she came there with an alabaster jar of perfume. As she stood behind him at his feet weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. Then she wiped them with her hair, kissed them, and poured perfume on them. Now, top tip from when we read the Bible. Often, if we want to get into the nitty-gritty of the Bible, a really good thing to do is to use a commentary. You can look these up online. There's all sorts of like different books. A guy called Tom Wright has written like a commentary for every single book of definitely the New Testament, probably the Old Testament as well. But they're really good for kind of giving you the context. Because actually for us, in our modern day context, when we look at this Bible passage, it seems relatively normal, like it's maybe a little bit weird, but there's nothing too out of the ordinary. It's fairly normal. But actually, to the Jewish reader, this whole scene would have been so uncomfortable, like so uncomfortable. And there's two main reasons. Because in life, we have these social scripts, we have social rules, we have narratives, we have unsaid things that just play out, and we know how they go. And one of these things in Jewish custom was the ritual of what happened when you had a guest over. So when you had a guest over, if they came to your house, you would greet them with a kiss, they would sit down, you would wash their hands and their feet, and then you would say grace. And it's only at that point that you would then recline at the table. But if we look at what happens here, the whole ritual is missing. Jesus simply comes in. The Pharisee does not follow any of this ritual. And so Jesus simply reclines at the table. The Pharisee doesn't do any of it. And so everyone in the room would have been thinking, what is going on? I feel really uncomfortable because I don't know what's just happened. Because when we deviate from these social scripts and these social narratives and the rules, we enter unfamiliar territory and we feel uncomfortable because we're like, oh, I actually don't know what happens now. The people haven't done the bit that they're meant to do, so now I don't know what happens. And people start to feel really uncomfortable because it's not how it's supposed to go. So that's the first reason. And the second reason is what the woman does. Now again, I went back to my commentary and I was looking up about the role of women and how they were treated in Jewish society. And they were definitely inferior to men. It is believed that women were responsible for sin coming into the world. They were not an adequate witness in court. If you were married, at least you had a man to speak for you, but your husband would still kind of monitor everything you did. They would, keep an eye on everything you did. You would be totally, like, managed, and you would be submitted to your husband. And actually, when it came to bearing children, if you, as a wife, gave your husband a daughter, shame on you, absolute disaster. This was a constant source of shame. So women, they just had no place in society, and particularly if you weren't married or worse still, you were divorced. You literally had no place in society. And so for this woman, it points out in the story that she had lived a sinful life. Now this takes it to the next level. Not only is she a woman, but actually she has lived a sinful life. She is not spiritually clean. And when it says this, we don't quite know what it means, but maybe she was a prostitute or she was an adulterer or she had been divorced or something. But basically, she was a social outcast and she was spiritually unclean. So just to everyone, she was totally unacceptable. And the other thing I forgot to mention, which is quite key, is that for women, they had to have their hair covered at all times because hair was considered very sexual at the time. So when we look at what this woman does, she comes in and she touches a man, not just any man, but someone who is quite well known. She touches a man and then she lets down her hair and she touches him with it. This is absolutely outrageous because she is someone who is like, you should just hide away because you're a woman, you've done a bunch of bad things. And actually she comes into this space, lets down her hair and touches Jesus with it. And again, everyone's like, what do we do? I don't know what happens in this situation. I don't know how this plays out because I've never been in this situation before. She isn't playing by the rules. I don't know what happens. And maybe it's a bit like the preacher turning up in her pajamas. You might not have heard much of what I just said because you're thinking, why is she wearing that? She's just trying to make a bit of a fashion statement. Is she feeling not very well? Does she run out of time to get ready? Is she going to try and make a point about this? But you definitely noticed it, right? And maybe it bugged you a little bit. Because I'm not playing by the rules. The rules are that pajamas and comfy clothes are for home and not for outside the house, not for church, definitely not for the preacher. And it doesn't sit easy, right? It's a bit uncomfortable. It's like, oh, yeah, that's weird. It doesn't sit comfortable. And don't worry, I felt just as uncomfortable as you. And I am actually going to take this off now because I am absolutely roasting. I've made my point and I'm going to take it off. Are we back? Okay, that's better. But yeah, we have these social scripts, and when people don't play by them, we get a bit uncomfortable because we don't really know what happens. And we've had these for all of humanity, right? All the way back to Jewish culture when Jesus was alive. We had these social scripts, these social rules, these narratives, the rules that we were meant to play by of how things are meant to go. Whether that's just the fact that we are expected to say please and thank you, or whether that is the fact that the preacher generally doesn't wear their pajamas to church. We have these social rules. And so in the same way that we have these expectations of how things work kind of with each other, we have these rules and expectations of how things work with God. And for this Pharisee, we've already said that he's a Pharisee, and Luke has really hammered that point home that this guy is a Pharisee. And so he's one of the scripts that this guy has is that I have to keep clean before God so he can accept me. I have to do what I can and stay as clean as possible so God will think I'm okay. How many of us find ourselves falling into that view of God? How many of us find ourselves falling into that place of, oh, I just need to do the right thing and then God will accept me? Or, oh, actually this week has been such a mess. He doesn't have time for me this week. He can't accept me. Or, oh, you don't know what I've done in my life. God could never accept me. Or actually, oh, maybe if I sort myself out first, then I can go to God and it will all be okay. I know I definitely fall into these patterns of thinking, particularly if I've had a day where I've been particularly maybe short with Alan when I haven't had enough food for the day, or if I've been, just kind of grumpy or gossiping too much or just not obedient to what God has asked me to do. I know that I can end up feeling a lot of shame and feeling like I have to come to God with my head hanging low and crawling back to him, feeling bad about it. But it's so easy to kind of fall into that view of God, right? But for Simon, this expectation of who God is and this kind of expectation of how it works with God leads him to totally miss God. Jesus, who's sat right in front of him. And we see that, we said earlier that this Pharisee was trying to suss out who Jesus was. And so he looks at the scene that has just unfolded in front of him, and it says this. He said to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would know who is touching him and what kind of woman this she is, that she is a sinner. He's basically saying he can't possibly be a prophet. He can't possibly be someone who is a messenger of God, who speaks the truth of God. Because he has just let this woman come in who is unclean, who is a bit of a social outcast, and she has just touched him, and quite sexually too, and she's just a sinner. That is not something that God would do, or something that someone who God has sent. That is not what they would do. And so because of this view he has of how things work, he just totally misses Jesus and his good news. Now Jesus, the good thing about Jesus is that he is an absolute maverick when it comes to social scripts. He just doesn't care. If you look at any of the Gospels, he talks to the people you're not meant to talk to. He touches the people you're not meant to touch. And he hangs out with the people that you are not meant to hang out with. Jesus doesn't care. He doesn't play by the rules. And so even in this situation, he comes into this house. Simon doesn't greet him with a kiss, doesn't clean his hands and feet, doesn't do any of that sort of ritual. And Jesus is like, yeah, that's okay. He doesn't say, oh, clearly not welcome here, and leave. Yeah, he stays. And similarly with the woman, he doesn't push her away saying, oh, this is so unacceptable, this is really embarrassing, I'm so sorry, I can't believe she's doing this. He accepts it. And he just continues on with the meal. And so he's not about to let Simon's social scripts get in the way and let him miss Jesus. So he decides to answer him. And I love this. It says, Jesus answered him, Simon, I have something to tell you. And earlier it says that the Pharisee thought to himself. And I love that Jesus is like, I can read your thoughts, buddy. I know what's going on. So he answers him. And actually, the way that he answers him, this is the first time that he uses his name. He says, "Simon, I have something to tell you." And it's just like Jesus saying, "I know you, I love you, I respect you." But actually, Jesus is like, "I want to challenge you. I want to challenge your worldview because I want you to see me." So anyway, Simon's like, "Go ahead, teacher." So Jesus tells this parable. Two people owed money to a certain moneylender. One owed him 500 denarii and the other 50. So Jesus, when he starts off, he meets Simon in a place that he understands. Actually, for Simon, his kind of worldview and expectation of how it works with God leads him to kind of understand that actually he's worked quite hard to be clean. So kind of he's probably about this close to God because he's worked really hard. He's followed all the laws. He's done all the stuff that he's meant to do. And maybe some people, like the woman, actually she's lived a bit of a sinful life, so she's a little bit further away from God. And so Jesus kind of meets him at this point. He understands of like, yeah, there's people who owe different amounts. But then he flips it on his head and Jesus carries on and says, neither of them had the money to pay him back. So he forgave the debts of both. It says neither of them could pay him back. This is Jesus' first initial way of just really gently challenging Simon of saying, actually, before God, our debts aren't payable. No one is debt-free. Actually, before God, we are all far from God. We all have a debt that stands in the way of our relationship with God, and none of us can pay that. But the moneylender forgives them both. Actually, we as Christians, should we choose to accept it, we can be forgiven of that debt. We all have a debt, and we all need to kind of come to terms with the fact that we owe Jesus, that we've done things that get in the way of our relationship with Jesus. But Jesus will forgive us in his kindness and his goodness. He forgives us. But at the end of this parable, Jesus really draws out the point that he's trying to make. And he asks a question, but he doesn't ask the question that we maybe think that he's going to ask. And particularly for Simon, this question could have been something like, which one will the moneylender feel more favourable towards? Which one should feel more guilty? Which one will actually have to work a bit harder in the future to stay in the good books, even though they've been let off this time? Or which one should actually live in the most fear of the moneylender because they've let them off this time, but next time it's going to be really bad? Instead, Jesus asks, now which one of them will love him more? And I imagine this question hangs in the air because for Simon, it's like, again, that feeling of like, oh, that's not what I thought you were going to say. That's not how it works. Debts have to be paid back. Actions have consequences. This isn't how it works. So he answers him plainly and he goes, I suppose the one who had the bigger debt forgiven? And Jesus is like, yeah, exactly. You've judged correctly. So then Jesus goes on to kind of explain this and unpack this a bit for Simon. And he offers, do you want to see how I saw this whole situation? This whole situation that played out that you were so outraged by and that gave you the right to say that I am not a prophet. Do you want to see how I saw this whole situation? So it says, then he turned towards the woman and said to Simon, do you see this woman? I came into your house. You did not give me any water for my feet, but she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You did not give me a kiss, but this woman, from the time I entered, has not stopped kissing my feet. And it goes on. You did not put oil on my head, but she has poured perfume on my feet. Therefore, I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven, as her great love has shown. But whoever has been forgiven little, loves little. Firstly, Jesus is basically saying, Simon, I came to your house. You didn't play by the rules. You didn't invite me in, give me a kiss, clean my hands and my feet. But where others would have been outraged by this, actually I stayed. You don't have to be perfect to earn my acceptance. I want to be here with you. And you don't have to get it right for me to be here. But what this woman did that you were so outraged by, she saw a way that she could serve me, and she used what she had, her tears, to clean my feet. She wanted to bless me, and so has not stopped kissing my feet. She wanted to honor me, and so has poured out expensive perfume. She's been forgiven for her many sins and so cannot help express the love that she feels. Where you see a sinner, I see a forgiven woman responding in gratitude to the one who has saved her. Jesus opens up Simon's eyes to this whole situation of actually not a woman who is completely acting out of turn, a woman who is responding exactly as she should be to the one who has forgiven all of her sins. Not because of anything she's done, simply because of his grace. And you know what? Jesus and his gospel of grace sees our lives in that way too. He forgives us in the big and the small, in the kind of day-to-day little things that we do, but also the bigger picture of our life. There is nothing too small or nothing too big that he doesn't forgive us from. And actually, the response he is looking for is love and acceptance and gratitude for that. He doesn't want us to feel guilty about it. He doesn't want us to live in fear. He wants us to respond in love. This is what he wants from us. And it sounds great, right? But actually, the reality is, it's actually really tricky living this out. For me, Jesus has been uncovering a lot of religion in me recently. A lot of these kind of ways of thinking of, I need to make sure that I'm good enough. I need to make sure that I do the right things and then I'll be okay with God. And to be honest, it's really tough to let that go because I'm quite comfortable in it. It's fine. It's not that great because actually you end up in a bit of a kind of spiral of you do something wrong, you feel shame about it, and then you go to God and you seek your forgiveness. And then you go back to feeling fine, and then you go back to doing something wrong. And it kind of ends up in this cycle. Like, it's not great, but it is fine because I know how it works. I know how this one goes. I know what's on the good list, the kind of reading a Bible, coming to church, making friends with the homeless people, doing all the like giving your money, all the volunteering stuff. I know that's on the good list. And I know what's on the bad list, the kind of gossiping, being greedy, and keeping things to myself, all of those kind of things. I know what's on the bad list. And I know that if I do something good, I get to feel good about myself. And if I feel bad, and if I do something bad, I feel bad about myself, but I know what the motions are to go through and to kind of mostly feel better about myself. I know how this one goes. Oh gosh, my notes have got so muddled up here. Here we go. But yeah, we know how that one goes, right? I'm sure you know how that one goes as well. We know that we do the good stuff and we get to feel good. We do the bad stuff and we feel bad, but we can kind of make amends for it. But actually, Jesus, in his kindness, has been like slowly coaxing me out of that. He says, I know that that is comfortable and I know it's familiar. And I know my way of doing things is slightly strange, it's different. It's unknown territory for you. Maybe you're not that familiar with it. But I have so much more for you. And we can totally see this in this last bit of the passage where the two times that the word forgiven is mentioned. Actually, they're both in two different tenses. Again, another great reason to read a commentary because it tells you stuff like this. My kind of ancient languages aren't quite up to scratch, so I wouldn't know this myself. But reading a commentary, it just gives you such an insight into a deeper level of the Bible. So I was reading a commentary and it says this. Firstly, when Jesus is talking about the person who is forgiven little, actually this verb forgiven is in the present tense. And this is like what I was saying earlier of that kind of like rotation of I do something bad, I feel bad about it, I go to Jesus, he forgives me. Because that's what he does. He always, always, always forgives us if we choose to accept it. That's what he does. But actually, in the present tense, it's something that happens now, but then actually, by the time I come back over here and I do something bad again, I have to go back on the whole cycle and I go back to feeling bad and then I go back to Jesus and I have to get the forgiveness again and the whole cycle keeps going. Because actually, that forgiven is just, it's just in the present tense. It's totally there. Jesus gives it so freely, but it's just for that moment. But when he talks about the woman, the verb that he uses here is in the perfect tense. And for those of you who maybe aren't quite grammar scholars, the perfect tense is used to talk about something that has happened wholly and completely in the past, but the effects of which continue on into the future. It's like something that has happened and been completely done in the past, the effects of which carry on into the future. So in this case, he's saying that this woman has been totally and fully forgiven for everything that she has ever done and everything that she will ever do. She is forgiven. That is her identity. She no longer has to enter into this cycle of doing something bad, feeling bad about it, carrying the weight of that shame, going to Jesus for forgiveness. She doesn't have to be part of that cycle anymore because she is forgiven. That is her identity. That is who she is. And it's this that Jesus invites us into. How much better does that sound than being in this constant whirlpool of going around and asking for forgiveness every time? Jesus invites us into that forgiven identity that results in an overflow of love poured out to him, the one who does it. But it's not easy, because that's not what we're used to, right? We're used to being in this whirlpool, this cycle that goes round and round, and actually stepping out and just receiving that forgiven identity of Jesus is difficult. But I guarantee that it's worth it. And so to finish, the last bit of the story says this. Jesus said to her, "Your sins are forgiven." The other guests began to say among themselves, "Who is this who even forgives sins?" Jesus said to the woman, "Your faith has saved you. Go in peace." And so Jesus reconfirms this woman's identity and lets her go in peace. We can find so much peace in the gospel of Jesus. But actually, we never do hear what happens to Simon. We don't know whether he's part of these other guests being like, "Who is this? Who does? Can he forgive sins? I don't know." Like just being a bit kind of unsure on the sidelines. And actually stepping into the gospel and fully living it, letting go of our kind of expectations of how it's meant to work with God can be quite difficult because it is unfamiliar. It's not what we're used to. But in the end, it releases us into so much more freedom and a greater ability to love Jesus. And it's a bit like me in my PJs. Actually, I felt like a bit of a Muppet earlier, this thing I got for Christmas. And it's the kind of thing I was like, I'll just wear that at home. It's quite comfortable, but I'll wear that at home. But actually, I felt like a bit of a Muppet earlier, but I've never been so comfortable at church. I've never worn trackies at church, and I've never been so comfortable and free. And that is what the gospel offers us. We get over this little bit of discomfort of being like, oh, I don't think that's how it's meant to work. And it releases us into this whole freedom. So I guess the question for us is, will we let Jesus root out the religious spirit in us? And are we prepared to get just a little bit uncomfortable to live fully in the freedom of his grace? Because that is what he offers us. And it's not easy, but I guarantee you it is so worth it. So we're going to take a little bit of time to pray. Because with all of these things, we need the help of the Holy Spirit. He is the one who reveals the kind of fullness of his gospel to us. Actually, he is the one who shows us the good news. He is the one who can show us those kind of expectations and worldviews that are within us. He's the one who can challenge them, and he's the one who can root them out and help us to live in that freedom. So one of the things that we're going to do first is just take a bit of time to listen to God, actually. We believe that God speaks to us. And maybe for some of us, that's a bit unfamiliar. You're not used to hearing from God. But I believe that God wants to speak to all of us. And sometimes it just takes us stilling ourselves for a second and kind of focusing on what's going on. Maybe God will put a picture into your head, or maybe he'll remind you of a certain situation or just something. But we're going to take a little bit of time to ask Jesus, what are those things in our lives? What are those expectations we have of him that are getting in the way of us living fully in the gospel? So I'm going to pray, and then we're just going to have a little bit of space. If you want to just close your eyes, ask God, is there anything in my kind of expectations of how this is meant to go with you, how I'm meant to relate to you, that's getting in the way? So yeah, Jesus, I pray that you would come and you would meet with each of us now. Lord, thank you that you delight over each of us and that you want to speak to us as your children. I pray that you would open our hearts and our ears to hear from you. And I pray that you would show us what are those things in our lives that we are believing that are stopping us, that are getting in the way of us grabbing fully hold of the gospel. So yeah, we'll just take a little bit of time of silence to wait and see what Jesus says.